Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show. I'm your host, Dan Breslin, and this is episode 144.5 with Paul Sloat on what to expect in 2020, our economic update. Paul is the founder and CEO of Green Drake Advisors in Wayne, Pennsylvania, and periodically joins us here on the REI Diamond Show to discuss the happenings in the economy, both here in the U.S. and around the world, and ties that into why it's important to us as real estate investors. Let's get to it. All right. Welcome back to the REI Diamond Show. Mr. Paul Sloat, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dan?
Doing well, for posterity's sake, because the info you discuss here with us on the show is so time sensitive, if you will. It's December 11th, 2019, and we'll be talking about upcoming 2020 here. But how are you doing today in Philadelphia? What's the weather like back there in my hometown today?
What's the weather like? It is sunny and in the 30s today. So
yeah,
we have really nice weather. It poured the last couple of days, but it's turned out to be a beautiful day today. Had
nice.
A little snow this morning, but no big deal.
We had like in the 20s and down into the teens and maybe single digits here in Chicago. Beautiful sunny day, but winter is definitely here. So cool. Enough about the weather and the background. So want to give us the presentation at what we have coming down the pike here, Paul?
Yeah, sure. So let's talk about where we are in the economy here in the U.S. and a little bit about the global economy. So where we are here in the U.S., if we have had a classic late cycle slowdown, very similar to 1998, which some of us remember, and 1966, which even I don't remember, but the statistics are the same as 1998. And typically what happens after the Fed starts lowering rates is the economic cycle extends for another 2.5 to 3 years. Okay. So what we can look at is, with the Fed lowering rates in 2019, the economic cycle should extend to late 2021 or 2022 before we have a recession. The appearance this time, and then I'll go into what is coming for the housing market and real estate, which your listeners care about. The background to this is we are late cycle in the economy. In general, that means labor markets are tight. Other inputs into the real estate area are tight, whether it's insulation or other sort of supplies into the area where pricing is starting to go up. So this is true not only for real estate, but for other areas of the economy. On top of this, which will have an impact on the U.S., and it's positive for economic growth, but will be negative for inflation, is that other countries around the world are stimulating. So we have Japan, who announced the stimulus equivalent to 2% of GDP. We have China, which has been stimulating its economy, just announced stimulus, additional stimulus equivalent to 1% of GDP. Indonesia, in the last 2 days, has stated that it wants to modify the law that limits the government's budget deficit so it can stimulate its economy. Indonesia, by the way, for your listeners, is the largest economy in Southeast Asia. So what we have, and we have the Indian economy, where the government is stimulating things. This will accelerate growth next year. In addition, Europe, appears on the cusp of a change. Christine Lagarde has been promoted to be head of the European Central Bank. Christine Lagarde is not a banker. Christine Lagarde was the former French finance minister. And what she is suggesting, and which appears to be gaining traction with governments in Europe, is that the government need to spend money in order to stimulate and accelerate economic growth in Europe. If we were to look at all this put together, what we have is central banks around the world have cut rates this year, which will provide, with a lag, stimulus to the global economy. Governments around the world are starting to put in place stimulus for next year, which will accelerate growth around the world. Lastly, the global inventory cycle, which has been in a down cycle for about 6 or 7 quarters, is bottoming and should bottom in the first quarter for the vast majority of industries and the second quarter for the remainder of them. Early industries such as semiconductors have already bottomed and are turning up. With this shift in the global inventory cycle, it will add acceleration to manufacturing growth as we are liquidating inventories at a time where wages and consumer spending continue to grow at a reasonable rate both in the U.S. and abroad. What this looks like to us is that you will likely see accelerating growth around what we see as a resource-constrained world. This is going to mean two things. Number one, inflation is going to accelerate. We're already seeing hints of that. For example, the waste companies, which we used to know as the garbage companies, because they came and picked up your garbage, but they're now called waste disposal to make it sound sexy, are raising prices 3%. We know that insulation prices are going up 5%. We know that other prices are going up. We know wages are going up 2.1%. We know that this year rental rates have gone up maybe 3%. We know lots of prices are going up. We think ultimately, given tight resources for labor, this is going to accelerate labor compensation, and we're going to see more inflation overall in the economy. As a result, interest rates will respond. Interest rates had a pullback over the last year because of the slowdown in the U.S. and the rise in the U.S. dollar, which held down imported inflation. And with the rest of the world accelerating and the U.S. accelerating as well, the dollar should pull back. So imported inflation will show its true colors and may show more. And this will add on top of the indigenous inflation in the U.S. For real estate investors, rates going up will be meaningful, especially on the long end. We also know that, according to the Federal Reserve's Senior Loan Officer Survey, banks continue to tighten standards for real estate loans. This means that for commercial real estate, cap rates probably go up, and prices may go nowhere or may go down. In fact, we know in major real estate markets around the country outside and outside the United States that commercial real estate prices appear to have peaked for the cycle and have started to come down, and whether it's in New York or London or Tokyo, and this will start having a feedback impact on other pieces of real estate. We think, at least in the short term, the Fed is on hold. The Fed's not going to do anything in an election year. It came under a lot of criticism from the president. If it were to raise rates in an election year, I think they would have a lot of political issues. There will be no, or unlikely, the Fed will raise rates before the election. However, we think that once the election is over, and with inflation accelerating next year, the Fed will raise rates. And we think that once they start raising rates in late 2020 or early 2021, they are going to raise rates more rapidly than most people expect. And that's what will put an end to the economic cycle. Now, let's talk about some statistics about real estate. And most of your investors are not involved in commercial real estate in terms of office or hotel or self-storage. They're involved really in rental housing. Let's talk about some statistics about rental housing. Housing affordability is at a low for rental housing. It is similar to where it was, believe it or not, in the late 1980s, where for your typical major metro area, over 50% of the renters are paying more than 30% of their income for rent. In other words, the median gross rent as a percent of household income exceeds 30%. The U.S. government considers 28%, anything above that, a burden. And it makes sense because if we're at 30%, then many cities are at 32 or 33, such as San Diego at 33 or New York at 31, you have a significant burden on the average renter, because if they're paying over 30% for rent and they're paying another 20% of their income to the federal government, and in many of these higher tax states, they're paying another 8 to 10% to the local and state governments, all of a sudden, 60% of their income's gone, and all they have left is 40% to pay for car, cable, phone, food, electricity, gas, everything else that they need, and healthcare, by the way. So we think that rents are very high relative to incomes and likely to come under pressure over the next decade. In addition, if we were to look at home price to income ratios, it is now at around 4.42. That's the ratio of home prices to income across the U.S. If we took the Case-Shiller Home Price Index and ran it against U.S. median annual income. By the way, that was only exceeded during the housing bubble between 2005 and 2009. We don't think that is a sustainable ratio. And it's certainly not a sustainable ratio if interest rates go up. Housing demand for new homes has accelerated, and that's because we had a pullback in mortgage rates about 1%. Every percent change in mortgage rates, as you know, for somebody who's taking a 30-year mortgage is equivalent to a 13% change in their monthly mortgage payment. So with the millennials being 50% of all purchasers of new homes and all homes in general, when rates pulled back, demand for new homes accelerated, and the public home builders say orders for new homes are up 12% to 18% year over year. Should interest rates go up, this would slow housing over the next year. And with home prices to median income where they are, it's highly unlikely prices would go up. Now, let's talk about something else, about buying a house to rent it. If we were to look at major metro areas such as New York or San Francisco, the price of a unit relative to rent in a place like New York is 34 times. In other words, your rental yield on the unit before any cost is under 3%. If we were to look at a place like San Francisco, that same ratio is 28. So what we're talking about there is the rental yield is below 3.5 4%. To get it above 4%, you have to go to something like Fort Lauderdale. And the problem is, in general, that that is a bad entry point from a cap rate perspective in terms of generating a return on your money. So we think that the potential in many of these major metros where people would buy homes to then rent them out is finished for a while. And it will be difficult to make money doing that because the price of housing is maxed out, the price relative to the rental yield has maxed out, and interest rates are going to go higher. So all those are going to combine to make it much more difficult to do that. It does not mean that ground-up development where you build something and then rent it out as a house can't work. We know people doing this in places like New Orleans or doing this in the panhandle of Florida. So there are places where you can do this and you can get a very good yield on ground-up construction. But we're at a point in the real estate cycle where you need to be careful because it's easy to make a mistake. We've heard some horror stories of people buying multifamily properties and then having real problems with those properties where the properties were not what they thought they were. So you're at a point where the margin for error is low and the margin of safety is slim to non-existent. So when we look at all of this, for much of what we see, we think you have to be really careful in the real estate area. And if we were to go out of rental housing and look at some other areas, we know supply-demand is poor for things like self-storage. It has been helped by the fact that interest rates went down, but from a fundamental standpoint, supply-demand does not look good. And should you have any kind of economic downturn, such as in 2022, those properties could have real problems. I know I just rented a little bit of storage, which I need for a short while, maybe 6 to 9 months, and I got a great rate on it because there's been so much self-storage that has opened in the last year in this area in Pennsylvania. The other thing we do know is you have prominent hoteliers talking about how RevPAR is going to continue to slow given all the supply that's coming and that they're also facing cost pressures because of wage costs. The other thing we should talk about is the role of government. As you know, government can change the rules. Government has changed the rules over time, and it is not so easy to sell an asset when it's unclear what the rules of the game are, especially if it appears those rules are going to negatively impact the value of that asset. So what am I pointing to? I am pointing to rent control regulations, which have been passed in a number of jurisdictions and which likely will become an issue in other jurisdictions. And as a landlord, this is a problem, especially if your costs are accelerating faster than the allowed rent increases. And so we think that that's something that you're going to have to keep an eye on and think about what is the likelihood that the local government is going to enact some kind of rent regulation. That is a very location-by-location, city-by-city type analysis, but it's just something to keep in mind, especially in the larger cities. The other thing I would comment on is, to an extent, real estate asset values are a function of public REITs. Stock market valuations are extremely high and are similar in many ways to where they were in the late 90s, which was the last time we had a growth stock mania. Ultimately, those types of manias end poorly, but probably not before we have a bear market. So after the bear market, valuations are likely to be lower than they are today, which will feed back on commercial real estate valuations, because part of the reason multifamily properties have been priced so high is because public REITs have very low cap rate, effectively, and can afford to pay high valuation for properties and still have them be, quote, accretive. Last thing we should think about here is the world is changing. And all these changes are going to force changes in how the U.S. approaches the rest of the world. And the easiest one to see is how we're looking at technology. But we also think this is going to impact trade in a much broader way and many other things. And so for the first time since the early 1990s, what goes on overseas is going to count and have a big impact on what happened in the U.S. And so we would advise the listeners to start paying attention to the rest of the world. And the reason we say that is because the world's become a smaller place and countries are interconnected economically in a way that exceeds how much they were interconnected 30 years ago. And what this means is that a problem in one area of the world can spread around the world and have an impact in a way that nobody would foresee. And that's the kind of thing that Wall Street calls a black swan. I don't call it a black swan. I call it a reasonable expectation given the way the world is connected. So the U.S. had a mortgage crisis in 2008. That mortgage crisis created a recession for the rest of the world. We have had problems in areas like Latin America or Southeast Asia in the past. And those have created problems for the United States. So what I would just say is that given what's going on in the world, your listeners should pay more attention than they have in the last 15 to 20 years to what is occurring overseas. We don't see a recession next year. We probably won't have a recession in 2021, likely the recession would occur either in late 2021 or early first half of 2022. And we don't see a long, deep recession because we have not had excesses here, as in many places overseas. So the U.S. should come out of that recession okay and be positioned to grow, but it will be a recession. So that's where we are. I would recommend your listeners think about what they want to own, what they don't want to own. We had recommended, for example, to somebody who came to us a year ago who had a lot of properties in Chicago that they thin out some of those properties. And if we were to look at pricing in Chicago, which I'm sure you're well aware of, Dan, pricing there has sort of flattened out, is actually down in a couple of areas of the city. So, as I would say, think about where we are in the cycle. Think about what's ahead. And think about being in a good place so that, assuming valuations go nowhere, assuming costs go up, and assuming there is a recession in something like 2022, they're prepared to take advantage of the opportunities that ultimately lie ahead. That's all for today, Dan. I'm sure you have a few questions.
Yeah, and so when you talk about preparing for a recession in a year to 2 years, I mean, you're referring kind of to getting in a cash position, being prepared to, I don't know, get lines of credit if it were like a real estate client. Like, what would be the action item to prep for the
recession? Well, the action items would be, number one, review your portfolio of real estate and see if there are any properties that you would not want to hold during a recession. Okay? So that would be thing one, right? Thing two would be, look at your portfolio of properties. Assume your overall occupancy drops. What does your capital structure look like relative to what could be a reasonable drop in occupancy and cash flow? Okay? So those would be the first two things I would think about. Okay? After you've thought about that, then you can think about, right, how much cash do I want to have? How liquid do I need to be? The truth is that banks are a lagged function to the market. So at the point where you're going to want capital, don't depend on the banks being there. Having gone through several recessions, right, they're never there at the optimal point. So maybe it's not just having relationships with banks. Maybe it's relationships with having with private lenders. Maybe it's relationships with, you know, mezzanine funds. Maybe it's relationships with a whole bunch of other capital sources that could provide capital at the point in time where the banks are unlikely to be there. Is that helpful, Dan?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if we look back without naming any names, it's some of the people who compiled large portfolios of assets, whether it is in multifamily, single family homes, a couple people jumped to mind who've been on our show here. They did have the ability to pool capital, put together this syndication. I think Howard Marks is a public figure who did do something of that nature, got himself liquid, put a fund together, and was primed at the right spot to buy the mortgage-backed securities that were trading for pennies at the dollar, literally in the midst of the crisis. But when the recessions come, the asset prices drop. If we were looking at last time when the crisis happened, you said that this one may not be so long, may not be so deep, and not that you can predict the future, but if we say the last, you know, economic situation.
I would say, Dan, I think this is going to be more like the 2001-2002 recession, which outside of technology was not a deep recession for the United States. It was a three-quarter recession, I think. I have to double check that. It certainly was no more than four quarters. It was relatively shallow. And real estate pulled back, but then roared ahead. Now, if you were in the technology business, you had a different issue. But for real estate, it was not a big issue.
And so if we were going to put some numbers on that to frame it in simplistic terms, if we went from 100% value in 2008 to maybe at the bottom being at 65% value for assets, what percentage of discount would you say a not so deep recession is? Are we talking going from 100% to 90% asset values? Do you think we're going to, you know, go from 100% to?
So here's what I think you have to be a little careful. Occupancies will drop. So I think this is going to be a class of real estate, right? So if unemployment goes from 3.5 to, let's say, 6.5 or 7, right? That's going to really hit things like office. That's going to hit things like, you know, concepts like WeWork. That's going to hit things like self-storage, right? You know, in the hotel area will get hit, but I don't see the depth, right? So maybe values go, instead of going to 60-65%, go to 80-85%, right? Except maybe in an area, so if I were to look at where there's potential overbuilding, you know, self-storage might be an area where there's overbuilding. But if I were to look at a lot of other areas, I don't see massive overbuilding. And part of the reason values got as low as they got was because we blew up the financial system, right? So nobody could get credit.
Correct.
Right? And so what happened was like what happened in 91, 93, for those of us who remember. Okay? That was the last time we blew up the banking system. And what happened then is you couldn't get credit. So people who had capital were able to go up and scoop up stuff at 60 cents on the dollar, sometimes 45 or 50 cents on the dollar. So I think that's a real question. Now, the other thing you have to factor into the commercial real estate is inflation is likely headed upward over the longer term. And if that's true, interest rates are going to head upward, right? And so are cap rates. So at some point, that's all going to have an impact on the valuation of all this commercial real estate. Does that make any sense?
It does.
Right? I mean, you know, and you've seen me speak, and I give that simple example. If valuations go back to where they were in terms of 06, 07, in terms of cap rates, what happens is it has a big impact on the ability of a piece of commercial real estate to inflate. So entry point becomes important, right? And probably the best entry points are going to be right after the recession in buying REO from the banks, right? Where they ended up with a building, they really didn't want the building, and then you go buy it from the bank, and instead of maybe it should go for 80, 85 cents, but maybe you could get it for 70, 75 cents, right?
Makes sense.
Right? So that, I think, is what's going on. And the banks this time, unlike last time, are very well capitalized. Their capital is double digits. Now, unlike last time where they were mid-single digits, and people like Citibank actually were low single digits in terms of equity capital. So all the major banks are now double digit in terms of capital, so we're not going to blow up the banking system this time. And so therefore, credit will be available, so I don't think things are going to get as cheap.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, Paul, as I like look back, you know, when I see people who sold a multifamily property or who sold an office building downtown here in Chicago and they made these outsized gains like they had bought them for 65 cents on the dollar. But if we went back to 2009 or 2010 and we said, oh yeah, this is the asset, you know, in hindsight, that's going to go for 65, 70 cents on the dollar. My inclination is to think that that asset probably looks like mall and retail property, which right now mall and retail properties, you know, are near impossible to refinance. The cap rates are already going up. The vacancies
Correct.
Are going up. And like maybe 5-10 years from now, it's a totally different looking concept. And everyone's pointing back to, oh, remember that in 2019? And those guys bought those mall assets for 50, 60 cents on the dollar. So it's like, I don't even know, you know, when the entry point is right, I'm not advocating to go back and go out and buy worthless stocks, real estate assets, whatever. But a lot of times they don't really look like good deals, even in the midst of the crisis, which I would say that the mall and retail properties are kind of in a state of crisis as we speak.
Yeah,
right?
And if you were to put a recession on top of that, it would bankrupt quite a number of malls, right? Think about that.
Yep.
Because retail sales at stores are already, you know, negative comps in many cases. And you've got those malls already under pressure. So if you were to add a recession where, let's say, retail sales drop 5 or 10% on top of it and cash flows collapsed, right, you're going to get a number of malls that will end up in bankruptcy. Or I would call them REO, effectively, right?
Yeah, and I think they might be on their way there already as we speak.
Yeah, but the recession will – they're on their way, but the recession will push them over the cliff, right?
Gotcha.
But I think, yeah, that's one area. You know, it's just – it's hard for me to know until you get into the recession, right? Last time, you know, there were a lot of opportunities to buy a lot of different classes of real estate basically because there was no credit. This time, I think there'll be credit, and there's a huge amount of money in private equity funds sitting waiting to be deployed, and the banks are well capitalized because government regulations have been reasonably strict. So I just think that you're just going to have a different recession, and outside of mall REITs, I'm not sure if you're going to get a huge pullback in real estate valuations.
Yeah, it makes sense. So, Paul, I got one final question here before we wrap up. I'm just curious if you have any answer for why they lowered the rates in the first place over the last couple quarters.
Oh, the Federal Reserve?
Yep.
Because they overshot where rates should have been. They should definitely not have done the rate rise in December. And the reason they lowered, because here's what was happening. It was doing two things. Number one, they raised rates too much, which was having a deleterious direct impact on the U.S. The second thing, they raised rates at the same time the rest of the world was lowering rates, which drove the value of the U.S. dollar upward. Every 10% change in the U.S. dollar is a negative 1% to economic growth in the following year and negative 0.5% to the year after that. So their interest rates were negative for growth, and they drove the dollar up, which was negative for growth, right? And so the economy slowed a lot this year. And they're cutting rates, and the dollar is beginning to look like it may be peaking. So, because it's back to the high from 2000 overall, and if the dollar were to pull back, which I think is not unreasonable, and I think that will happen either indirectly because the markets do it or directly because the U.S. government does it, that'll be at least a neutral to stimulus to U.S. growth.
All right.
So does that answer your question?
It does. I appreciate that, Paul. So for anyone listening who might want to reach out, get in touch with you, do you want to share some contact information or a website with the audience?
Sure. So our website is www.greendrakeadvisors.com. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can easily fill out the contact us form on the website. Also, you can call our offices directly. Our phone number here is 610-687-7766. And you can get in touch with us that way.
All right. As always, got several pages of notes here myself, Paul. I appreciate you blocking out the distractions and taking the time to prepare and give us your ideas here on what to look out for. So thank you for coming on the show, Paul.
And thank you for having me, Dan. Take care.
And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. On our next episode, we have Mark Kinney joining us to discuss his acquisition and management of more than 4,000 apartment units. Don't want to miss that one. Are you a deal maker? I buy a ton of houses in Atlanta, Chicago, and Philadelphia. We have closed on 195 deals year to date and have another 80 or so houses in the inventory under construction, either sold and waiting to settle, or waiting to be sold and settled, or we're under contract waiting to buy. That said, we have plenty of capital and are ready to buy more. So if you have a deal, please contact me directly using the form at reidiamonds.com. Accredited investors interested in short-term passive mortgage investment opportunities with double-digit returns can head over to fundrehabdeals.com and check out available high-yield investment opportunities, www.fundrehabdeals.com. This concludes today's episode. Thank you again for tuning in to the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here, signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.